we have Vladimir Pleshkov and Elena Winther, who are well-known pianists in this area, having run the Pleshkov Music Center in Hudson for several years and performed many times in Hunter. They'll be performing this weekend at the Hudson Valley Arts Center, 337 Warren Street in Hudson. And in January, they have just announced a concert at Carnegie Hall. Vladimir Pleshkov was born in Shanghai in 1934. He's lived in Asia, Australia, the United States, and Europe. And Elena Winther, his wife, was born in California to a Danish father and English mother, has performed as a soloist with San Francisco and Los Angeles Symphony Orchestras, and is an expert in chamber music involving the piano. Hello, welcome to the show. Hello, Elena.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, how do you do?
Welcome to the afternoon show.
Good evening.
So, tell us what...
We do have a difficult time in hearing you. We are on a speakerphone. Do you think we should not be?
Yeah, if you can just speak up a little bit, I'm sure we can make this work.
Possibly
okay,
try.
It's extremely, very difficult to hear you. It breaks up.
Okay. Is this any better? Can you hear us now? Hello?
Yes. Can you hear us?
We can hear you. You do sound a little bit faint.
Can you hear us?
Yes, we can hear you, but if you just speak up a little bit if you can.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Well, I wonder if we ought
Hello?
To...
Hello? Yes, we're still here. Can you hear us now?
It may be advisable
yes,
to...
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, so tell us a little something about the recital in Hudson this weekend first.
This Saturday, which is the 20th of January at 8 o'clock at the Hudson Valley Arts Center, both Elena, my wife, and myself will be giving a piano concert, each one having half of the program. Elena will play a series of short pieces by Johannes Brahms, two rhapsodies and four intermezzi, and I will play a sonata by Dmitri Kabalevsky dating from World War II and a Beethoven sonata. So we are sharing the program. Our styles are quite distinct so that we don't compete with each other. We complement each other, and it seems to work quite well.
And are you playing on period pianos?
No. No, we are playing on modern instruments.
This time we are playing on modern instruments at the Hudson Valley Art Center where the concert is held. There is a collection of period instruments which belongs to Elena and myself, and we do give concerts on them periodically, but not exclusively. The pianos are interesting in themselves because they portray the evolution of an invention which started very humbly and blossomed eventually into the industrial age grand piano, which can fill any size hall with magnificent sound. The instruments that we own and display and demonstrate at the museum by appointment are from the days of Mozart, built when Mozart was still alive, Beethoven, built when Beethoven was still alive, Chopin, and so on. So these are relics which are time machines because they all are playable and work. At most of the museums, when visitors come, they see instruments which may look beautiful and have annotations attached to them. What we prefer to do is present these instruments through the music for which they were built, which was composed on them or for them, and they in this way can tell a story about mankind, because basically these are human treasures which express part of our experiences, which are common across the boundaries of time and space and geography and political barriers and social and economic barriers. These instruments indeed open up our perception of humanity up to certain points in the fact that we're all united, and music is only one of the many facets which can bind us together, demonstrating that basically we are subject to the same emotions, same woes, same joys as people 200, 300 years ago.
Now, on a more sort of mundane level, does one have to adapt in changing from one piano to another? I mean, are the mechanics different?
I can't hear you.
I said.
Can you repeat that, please?
When you go from a modern piano to a period piano, what sort of adjustment do you have to make, if any?
Very good question. What we have found, Elena and myself, and also some college students who come to do research on these pianos, is that if you work on the period instruments, let's say from the days of Mozart, you can learn the diction of the day, the psychology of expression through the encoded sound. And you can translate some of it, or most of it, into the modern piano. It changes your style, it changes your perception, it deepens your expression. If you work on the modern piano, let's say on the music of Mozart, you cannot translate it to a Mozartian piano on the spot. It just doesn't work. So the period instruments are marvelous teachers, because they explain without words, through sound, what music is all about in the day in which they were built. It's the same for the Beethoven piano. You begin to understand not just Beethoven as a composer, not just his music as great music, but also the events of the day, the turmoil which produced the post-French Revolution democracy, and all the upsurges of the middle-class power, which was beginning to develop free speech and new ways of approaching economy and society itself. It's all there, somewhere, in the instruments and in their diction, in their speech, which is sound. And when sound is well arranged by a great composer, it has subliminal meaning, which is apparent to us as musicians and as non-musicians through time.
Was it fairly common for people to own pianos in the time of Mozart?
I can't hear you.
I'll repeat that. I said, were pianos widely distributed and owned during Mozart's time, say, or Beethoven's?
Were pianos widely distributed and owned in Mozart's time?
The piano became, towards the end of the 18th century, at the time Mozart was approaching the end of his life, the piano became a social instrument. So it was widely distributed among the emerging middle classes, who could finally afford a musical instrument, as opposed to harpsichords, which were extremely expensive and were available only to a limited class of people, well-to-do. The piano became a middle-class instrument and entered the social circuit in the following way. A family would own one of them, which would be the equivalent of our telephone, radio, television, computer. This was the entertainment center of the family, around which friends gathered to sing and to dance, around which your own children would develop their social contacts, and for the daughters especially, if they knew how to play, no matter how little, they would be able to meet eligible young men, and the piano became, for better or worse, a marriage broker. This is what happens in the novels of Jane Austen, the English writer who always puts a piano somewhere in the background in her novels. And young people meet in some way around the piano, at least fleetingly in her novels. So it was a very powerful social instrument. You notice that I haven't mentioned one word about music. It was obviously a very powerful musical instrument because composers flocked around it and wrote some of their most glorious music. So the piano was new, and the piano was a powerful catalyst in society and civilization and culture, and later economy, because with mass production there were a lot of manufacturers who became terribly important. Just mentioned Steinway in the United States, Yamaha in Japan, and the Dösendorfer in Austria. These were extremely powerful economic factors as well, and allied things like publication of scores, publication of books about music. All this is part and parcel of the development, the evolution of the modern piano.
Now, at Carnegie Hall, you will be playing the piano, playing Beethoven and Rachmaninoff. You're also presenting new choral works. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Within very recent times, in the last 2 years, as I was recovering from a major illness in a hospital, I began for reasons unknown to me, to hear finished music in my head. All I had to do was grab a piece of music score paper and notate it down. I started with one measure, then one page. Eventually, it became an hour and a half of music in a very short time. The interesting thing is that while being trained as a pianist, not as a composer, I began to write music for unaccompanied voices, which I've never done before in my life, a subject I know the least about. So it's choral music for a choir, which in Carnegie Hall will be about 30 people. And this is the premiere of the music that I heard in my head, which is quite astounding in that Most composers, such as me, who have not composed before, would be happy to have the music sung in their living room by friends. In this case, we're beginning in the most iconic hall in the world with the top billing and top the newsworthiness and so on. Obviously, we've tried it before in other places, but apparently it's interesting enough to attract singers of major qualities, recording companies, publications, and hopefully audiences. In that particular concert, which is on January the 22nd, a Sunday, in the afternoon, in New York City, in the large hall of Carnegie, half the concert is devoted to works which I wrote for an unaccompanied choir, which both not just sopranos, altos, tenors, basses, but also a deep bass, a basso profundo, plus three boys from St. Thomas who are soloists, in almost every of the 18 or so compositions that will be done. The rest of the program, half of it, will be devoted to piano music. I'll play as soloists Beethoven's very last sonata, which is a highly spiritual and profound work. He never followed it with any more sonatas. He couldn't do any better than that. And with Elena on two pianos, we play a work by Rachmaninoff, the finale from his symphonic dances, the last work he ever wrote, where he uses as part of the movement the same themes from the Middle Ages that came to me in one of my settings for the choir. So in a sense, I'm in competition with Rachmaninoff, which is marvelous. I don't pretend that my music is on the same level as Beethoven's or Rachmaninoff, but it is apparently good enough to be programmed along with them. What the critics will say is another story, but good or bad, it's better to have something said in critical terms than to have silence. So I'm extremely grateful and happy for this occasion. It was not planned. It more or less fell into our laps. So our lives have changed. We are preparing very carefully for this. The choir is starting rehearsals after Labor Day. They'll have probably 50 hours of rehearsal in order to prepare for the concert at the highest level. And we are rehearsing, Elena and I, in order not to fall flat on our faces as pianists, because in the Stern Auditorium, only the very best people appear, and by quirk of fate, we are there, so we have to prove ourselves. It's a marvelous challenge for a person of my age.
You certainly deserve the highest congratulations for arriving there. Will you be conducting the choir yourself?
No, the choir is independent of me. It has its own conductor, Dan Foster. It's composed of professionals of solo caliber from upstate New York and New York City itself. Every singer has great credentials. Since I know very little about vocal technique, I wouldn't be allowed to conduct even if I wanted to. I was told very plainly to go to my seat in the box and come out on stage when it's my turn to play and Elena had to play on the stage, and then go back into the box and sit there quietly and don't do anything.
Do you each have a favorite piano that you like to play?
Yes, and this is Elena speaking. Mine is the Homburg Steinway, and I personally own one. It is my favorite instrument. I like the New York Steinway also, but there's something about the warmth of a Homburg and the lushness of the sound that I'm very partial to. Vladimir?
In my case, as far as favorite pianos are concerned, for practical reasons as well as aesthetic and artistic reasons, most of the good halls where we've played, we have played in Asia, in Europe, America, and Australia, most of the halls have Steinways. The one advantage is that they are uniform. In other words, if you come across a Steinway, you know you can survive a concert if you're in good shape. You cannot blame the piano, only yourself. There are other great pianos in the world, and I have played some of them, and so has Elena. These are the Austrian Bösendorfer, the Bechstein, and Yamaha, the Concert Grand. These are all great pianos. In our own collection, if you can call it that, we have modern instruments which are sound-based. And these are the ones we practice on, these are the ones we record on, and these are the ones we perform on. In Carnegie, they will have a Hamburg Steinway and a New York Steinway, which is exactly what we have at home. So that's one advantage of the upcoming concert.
Is there...
To finish this idea, naturally, every pianist loves to play on a great piano, but one great pianist of some time ago, Ferruccio Busoni, an Italian, said the following, and I'll never forget it. He said, "Don't complain. There are no bad pianos in the world, only bad pianists."
Is there a piano out there that you haven't played on that you would like to?
We have played, there's a piano called the Fazioli. It's an Italian piano, and we have played it, but never in concert. And it is one of the great pianos of the world, but it's very rare because it's such an expensive instrument. It's handmade. So it's almost impossible to find one in a concert hall, but we have played it. It's a great instrument.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the Carnegie Hall or Hudson recitals?
Well, what I would like to add is that our perception of life itself is changing because of all of these experiences. We have become more sensitive people. I have become more creative. We have both become better master class teachers. As a result of all this, and all this is very recent, so the Hudson Valley Art Center with its pianos that belong to us and the people who come there from different places, for instance from Japan in order to do research connected with our pianos for the master thesis or for reasons of improving their perception of music as interpreters. These interactions are extremely valuable to us. So we have grown very recently as musicians and maybe as people. I have to admit that you can acquire a lot of things that are missing in your life in terms of just being a decent human being. This is what music has done to us. As far as the practical side of things is concerned, we do spend sleepless nights worrying about how we play, where we play, being ready, being good enough to justify the claims that we made. This is our responsibility. The tickets for the Carnegie Hall are on sale already. They're announced on the web. Carnegie Hall itself is publicizing the concert and tickets and buses for transportation from long distances to and from New York to avoid the cost of bridges and parking and the inconvenience. All that is available already through Hudson Valley Arts Center.
And for more information, people can go to www.plushakoff.com. Thank you very much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you indeed.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported hands-on radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Come to the third annual Catskill Mountains Eco Fair, Green Living and Energy Education, Saturday, September the 24th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the grounds of the Michael J. Quill Irish Center, Route 145 in East Durham, New York. There'll be vendors, demonstrations, lectures, food, crafts, a plant swap, and music. The third annual Catskill Mountains Eco Fair. For more information, call 518-634-2286 or go to mjqirishcenter.com.
WGXC founding underwriting support is provided by Common Ground Dispute Resolution Incorporated. open to all residents of Columbia and Greene counties, Common Ground offers mediation services for the resolution of personal, civil, and criminal disputes experienced as part of everyday living. More information at commongroundinc.org.
This is Al Jazeera.
The crackdown in Syria continues as security forces target the cities of Latakia and Homs. And despite international criticism, there's no sign of the government giving in. I'm Selina Downs. This is Al Jazeera from London. Also coming up, defending the euro, France and Germany call for closer European governance. New evidence casts doubt over James Murdoch's testimony in the News of the World phone hacking scandal. The UN says it won't stop aid to Somalia despite reports half of it is being sold on. We report from Mogadishu. On the western city of Latakia, in the last few hours there have been reports of more heavy gunfire. 35 people have now been killed there. Elsewhere in Homs, activists say several people were killed on Monday night. Now, Al Jazeera is not allowed to report from inside Syria. From Ramtha, across the border in Jordan, Nisreen El-Shamela reports.
Making their aspirations for freedom loud and clear in Al Malab Street in Homs after the Taraweeh prayers on Monday night. And the Syrian government making its point that it will continue to quash protests even louder. Activists in Homs told us several people were killed and injured at many similar protests across Homs province on Monday night. But Latakia is by far the most severely affected and it continually relied on Syria's naval power. Activists told Al Jazeera tanks continued to raid and destroy Ar-Ramil Al-Janoubi neighborhood. Syrians and non-Syrians alike reportedly received death threats if they failed to leave. The Palestine Liberation Organization joined the international chorus of condemnation of Syria's actions.
The shelling is taking place using gunships and tanks on houses built from tin, on people who have no place to run to or even a shelter to hide in for safety from these actions. This is a crime against humanity, and we at the same time share with the Syrian people the same goals and aspirations to achieve freedom and dignity.
And in the town of Jabli,